From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open from American Express, presenting the interactive webcast event, Making a Name for Yourself. Kate and Andy Spade and Bobby Brown discuss their leap from business to brand, created by Open from American Express. Registration at openforumonline.com. You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In the 1980s and 90s, East Harlem was a couple of blocks, but a world away from the wealthy Upper East Side. The crime rate was at its peak, and crack cocaine was sold openly in the streets. Today, East Harlem, the area between 96th and 125th Streets, Fifth Avenue, and the East River, is one of the hottest frontiers of gentrification. In his book, The Tenants of East Harlem, which is published by the University of California Press, Russell Lee Sharman, an assistant professor of anthropology at Brooklyn College, has written an unconventional biography of the neighborhood, told through the life stories of seven residents whose experiences span nearly a century. And I'm very pleased to welcome Mr. Sharman to my show today. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Did you choose East Harlem as your subject because you lived there, or did you move there because you wanted to study the area?
That's a great question. I chose it because I lived there. We actually moved to start a nonprofit about 7 years ago. And as my career as an anthropologist developed, I felt I couldn't not write about this neighborhood because it is so interesting, so diverse. It's sort of an anthropologist's dream in some ways.
Does gentrification mean that white people like you are once again moving into the neighborhood?
Absolutely. And it's interesting you say once again, because one of the things that I really wanted to look at is the great diversity of East Harlem, especially over the last couple hundred years. I was specifically dealing with living residents, so it can only span so far. But one of the interesting things is that we see these different ethnic groups moving in and really changing the character of the neighborhood over and over again. And now in the last 10 years, certainly we've seen a lot of changes.
So a century ago, it was what? Irish, German, and Italian.
Yeah, it sizes it up pretty well. Yeah, Irish and German, and the Italians were just moving in at the turn of the century, especially into the 1920s. And the Germans and the Irish were actually beginning to move out at that period when it became more Italian Harlem.
And then when did it become largely Hispanic?
Well, the relationship with Puerto Rico, which became the sort of the most dominant Latino group that moved into the neighborhood, began long before that. But the real influx of Puerto Ricans into East Harlem begins after the Second World War. So it really wasn't until the 1950s and 60s that it became truly Spanish Harlem or Puerto Rican neighborhood.
And before then, it was still largely Italian?
It was largely Italian, though that was changing as well. The great blow to the Italian Harlem was the federal housing project that really changed the character of the architecture of the community, and many began to move out at that point.
Those huge projects that we see when we drive down FDR Drive, for example.
Absolutely.
So the personal histories you look at are the biographies of people you know very well. The representative of the Chinese community is your landlord. The Mexican mm-hmm. representative is your hairdresser, and so on. Did you have enough distance to really conduct a scientific investigation using those people?
Well, the interesting thing, and I think the fascinating thing for me about cultural anthropology, is that it is about personal relationships. The work that we do is qualitative rather than, say, sociology and its quantitative methods. So while there's some great studies about demographic changes and this kind of thing in New York City, what I wanted was to give people stories. And inevitably, in anthropology, you do build these personal relationships.
But then the real problem is finding seven residents who will represent the waves rather than just be unique characters in their
right.
own right.
Yeah, absolutely. And I talk about this in the very beginning of the book about what does it mean to be representative? How do you find one person that will encapsulate everything that you know about, say, the Puerto Rican immigration into the community or the Italian? And for me, I felt it was important to demonstrate that everyone's story has something to contribute to that. And I use history and other archival data to talk about what was going on around the time of their lives, but to show that everyone's story has something interesting to say about this particular community.
Would you say that East Harlem is kind of representative of changes that have occurred in the city in general?
I think absolutely. One of the most interesting things for me in researching the book was the history of New York City. I think really the history, and in fact one of the subjects of the book, Lucille, says it so well. She says the history of New York is in, it's in Brooklyn, it's in Queens, it's in the people of New York City. And what I found was that these folks tended to talk about changes that were affecting everyone in the city, the fiscal crisis, the housing projects, all of these things from East New York to East Harlem.
Now, Lucille is African-American.
Correct.
And East Harlem is next to Harlem. Mm-hmm. Has there always been spillover?
There has for African-Americans. Harlem has always been a much more nebulous, I think, geographically than writers and others have tried to portray it. So as African-Americans were moving north, especially at the turn of the century, there was obviously a real concentration in Harlem, but it certainly spilled over. And it was Puerto Ricans, for example, that considered Fifth Avenue a more strict boundary.
My guest is Russell Lee Sharman, assistant professor in the Department of Anthropology and Archaeology at Brooklyn College and author of The Tenants of East Harlem, which is published by the University of California Press. At the beginning of your book, you write that to understand East Harlem, you have to understand, I'm quoting, how people transform the streets and how the streets transform the people. So how do you, what do you mean by that?
Right.
We're talking about the buildings themselves and then the people who live in those buildings?
Well, not just the people who live in the buildings, but there's many examples. And I think if you pay attention as you read, you'll see these different spaces in the community come up over and over again, whether it's Jefferson Park and the Jefferson Pool or the Market, for example. The Market is an open-air market under the elevated train along Park Avenue. And for Lucille, it was called the Market. And the people who worked there were African-American, some Puerto Rican, but mostly Jewish. And then for Jose, for the Puerto Ricans, it's La Marqueta. And it's a very different sort of notion of that space. And so the way people project onto the space of the neighborhood, I think, is an important way that the neighborhood has the kind of character in terms of how we think about it.
So does the Market become different enclaves for different groups? In other words, is Jose talking about a Puerto Rican market, or is he seeing that Jewish African-American market as also being Puerto Rican in some way?
I think in some ways, especially in that example, La Marqueta is a sort of center focal point for the Puerto Rican community. But what's surprising to me was to talk to Lucille and hear her talk about it. And she will say, you know, they call it La Marqueta now, but for me it was always the Market.
Was this always a neighborhood for poor people? The first person you profile is Pete, whose parents came from Italy in 1922, and he talks about being a member of a gang.
Right, which of course you will see that the way we talk about gangs is very different, I think, from the way Pete talks about it, for example, where it was more a block association of youth that were much less the sort of stereotypical violent gangs that we read about or hear about, especially in the films of the 1950s and 60s. But in that sense, East Harlem has always been a working class community. I mean, it was essentially founded for the workers who were building the elevated railway. I mean, it was started out as Northern Europeans and then eventually became Irish, German, and so forth, but always working class.
But mostly low-rise until the 1950s when public housing created this high-density tower in the park design.
Exactly. And that, I think, was one of the most significant changes in the community and continues to be an important force for resisting some of the changes that are happening now. Are those federal buildings, for better or worse, they are there to stay and have certainly characterized much of how we think about the neighborhood.
Same thing is happening in Red Hook in Brooklyn.
Absolutely.
The projects are there as something that stands in opposition to gentrification.
Right. And of course, the irony is that when they were first built, they were considered the most desirable places to live among East Harlemites and I'm sure in other communities as well. These were clean, nice, high-rise buildings where you were away from the problems of tenements and absentee landlords and so forth.
Pete is in his 80s now. Does he still feel at home in a neighborhood that used to be all Italian?
I think so. Pete has found an amazing way to sort of shepherd his block. In terms of how far he gets away from his block, it's hard to say, but he certainly has a very paternal attitude toward the community. Certainly he's got his gripes. He has his concerns. He has his regrets. But at the same time, I think that, you know, this is a guy who would never move.
Jose says he didn't feel safe in East Harlem while he was growing up.
Certainly. And Jose is an interesting character as well. I mean, this
second generation Puerto Rican.
Correct. And this is a man who is incredibly passionate about East Harlem. He has his website and, you know, he gets no money for this. This is just his passion. He loves his community.
But he left for a while, didn't he?
He did. He did indeed. And it was a very difficult time for him. He left because he wanted a yard. You know, he wanted a space for his family, which is not something you can have in East Harlem. And it didn't take long for him to come back, less than a year. So for all of his misgivings and criticisms and problems, this is someone who is passionately committed.
And then the new influx into the Hispanic community is Mexicans. Maria is a 31-year-old illegal immigrant from Mexico. She works as a hairdresser. Mm-hmm. What brought her to New York? Is she from Puebla like so many other Mexican immigrants?
No, actually. She is from a little town called Cuautla, which is just outside of Mexico City, which is actually known for being the birthplace of Emiliano Zapata, interestingly enough. She came in part mostly to support her mother, who was trying to build a house. She came to work as a housekeeper, actually. And through a series of trials, she eventually ended up living in East Harlem cutting hair, which is what she did back in Mexico. But yes, what's great about her chapter is I think it really addresses a lot of the issues of immigration in general, not just into East Harlem.
And then you talk about her witnessing fights between Mexicans and Puerto Ricans in front of her building. You would have thought that the Hispanic community would have found certain things that tied it together.
I think they do in some levels, but in many levels, you're absolutely right. There is a real sense of tension about the character of Spanish Harlem. What does that mean?
Any different than the turf wars that occurred earlier between Italians and Puerto Ricans?
Probably not. In terms of the sense of place and connection to place, it has to do with the sense of access to resources, a sense of legacy and identity. You know, the Puerto Rican community has done a fantastic job of developing institutions like museums and so forth. And the Mexicans are just now getting a foothold into the community, and it's rocky.
Then there's Muhammad, who was born in Guinea in 1964, grew up in Sierra Leone, and came to New York 15 years ago after having lived in England. Why would he want to live in this area? Is there a growing West African population in
Israel? Well, there is. But one of the things about that chapter, Muhammad actually doesn't live in the community. He has a store in the community.
A 99-cent store.
Exactly. And his story is really about the connection of West Africans to the sort of informal commerce of New York City. That's something that's been written about and talked about. We've all seen the vendors on the streets. And Muhammad's story is about transnationalism. It's about the way an individual moves across borders throughout their life and the way that has changed in recent years and how he is able to live in these multiple locations and survive as he does as a businessman in these various cultural contexts.
And then there's Xiji, who's from China.
Mm-hmm.
They fled China in 1989. And he wound up working in the lobby of a Times Square hotel. Is there a growing Chinese community there?
There has always actually been a relatively large Chinese community, especially in one of the particular housing blocks known as Franklin Plaza. But it is not necessarily known as, obviously, an Asian enclave, East Harlem. And that's one of the reasons I chose West Africans and Chinese was to demonstrate the incredible variety. You know, this book could have had 57 chapters. And it's not necessarily that they were dominant in that sense, but they all had something interesting to contribute in terms of the way even small groups might feel connections to the neighborhood.
And the case of CG, he's your landlord, so he also might look the other way if you cause any trouble as a tenant.
Hopefully so. But, you know, interestingly, his story is a difficult story, especially of his time in China. And he was concerned about the way that he was being portrayed. But I think his story is so powerful in that sense.
So do you think gentrification is a good or a bad thing for a neighborhood like East Harlem?
I think gentrification is a thing. It is happening. One of the points that I try to make in the book is that poverty like gentrification is not necessarily about rational choice, that these are machines in process, infrastructural and structural issues. How is it affecting East Harlem? I'm seeing East Harlem, and this is just my own personal perspective, as sort of leapfrogging the normal process of development, where we're going straight to sort of raising whole city blocks and building co-ops and condos that locals could never afford. I can't afford to buy into the neighborhood now.
And that's the complaint about gentrification. On the one hand, it makes the neighborhood feel safer. It offers more diversity of products. You can get better stuff in the stores. On the other hand, people are priced out of their apartments.
Well, you know, Jane Jacobs, who recently passed away, wrote this amazing book, Death and Life of American Cities, and she talks about cataclysmic investment, where we let certain communities lie dormant for so long and disinvest and then pour money into them to the point where, to make a profit, these development companies, you know, tend to shut out those who have lived there for generations. And that is unfortunate.
Well, this is a neighborhood that has so many different labels: East Harlem, Spanish Harlem, El Barrio, Upper Yorkville, which reveals an awful lot about
like
this transformation. Are
Absolutely.
There others?
Yeah, that actually is one of the real thorns in the side of locals, the idea of Upper Yorkville. And because
it's
not
like
just
the East Village.
Sure, not just the economic changes, but the cultural identity of the community. And that's what is so important to the residents.
You've just returned from Costa Rica. You're doing research on a new project?
I am indeed. I'm working on an apparition of the Virgin Mary in Costa Rica, and actually also writing a book with my wife Cheryl about New York after dark, night shift labor in the city. So a lot of different things going on.
But meanwhile, there is this book, The Tenants of East Harlem, Russell Lee Sharman. The book is published by the University of California Press. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for listening to The Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.